Unfortunately, he doesn't strike me as a very happy guy. He seems to have a drug problem, and his ex-wives don't particularly care for him. His children don't particularly care for him, except for a small group of people who are on the board of his companies. He doesn't seem to be a loved person. So, and he seems to be a very needy person as well. So, you know, if you ever wonder what would it be like to be the richest man in the world, well, apparently not much.
He's got a lot of children. A guy like that, and how many wives?
Well, most of the mothers of his children he never married. He's a little bit twisted. His father is twisted in the same way. His father was a big guy. He's still alive. He promotes that it's important for people to breed to ridiculous extents. His father divorced his mother and at one point or another married another woman and then divorced her and then I think married the woman's child, the daughter. It was his stepdaughter that he married and had kids with that. With her. So both his father and him believe in procreating, both in marriage and outside of marriage. He wants to spread his genes all over the place.
It's not good for you. It's going to come back and bite you.
Well, I mean, a lot of things that he's done has bit him. And again, if you got billions of dollars and a good public relations firm and a bunch of very good lawyers, you can get away with it for a very long time, until the day that you can't. And that day, unfortunately, for him is quickly approaching. You know, I mean, there's no way he's going to turn Twitter around. And, you know, I'll leave it to Paul to tell you the problems at SpaceX and how SpaceX is giving NASA a bit of a migraine. Because they don't seem to be holding up their end. And I don't think NASA knows exactly how to approach the problem.
He will have his money.
I don't want $200 billion. I don't know what I would do with $200 billion. It's not like anyone's going to give me $200 billion. I don't envy people. I look at the whole picture. And if you ever want to talk to unhappy, miserable people, find someone who won the lottery for a lot of money. And they lost their family, they lost their friends, they lost a lot of things, and then they ended up bankrupting themselves because they didn't know how to handle money, and a lot of thieves stole it from them. So I don't envy ridiculously rich people. They got their own set of problems.
That should happen to all of us, shouldn't it? I'll give it a shot.
Okay, Stu. It's one of those things that eventually bites one on the ass, but you know, if I should find a monkey's paw, I'll FedEx it over to you.
Let me just say good evening to the other station as well, Roy. Look, where I live in Lake Success, I would say one third of every of all cars are Teslas. He makes a lot of money, and he turned out a lot of interesting items. The EV market is suffering because people simply don't want it. So-called pundits in Washington are pushing it down everybody's throats. Billions of dollars were spent for charging stations that never took place. All EV cars are suffering. So you can't blame Elon Musk if the EV market is waning. It's simply an idea that we don't need, no one wants. You really have to take a more in-depth look into this, Roy, before you condemn him. Things he's accomplished, we can only dream about. And I'm not defending him. I'm just being neutral.
Well, it sounds like you're defending them, but I don't know. I don't think the his biggest problem is the fact that EVs were kind of overhyped, and now, unfortunately, it's just self-correcting measures. He's made a habit of promising impossible technological things repeatedly since the very beginning of all this. And he's going to do it again. He just did it a month or so ago with the robotaxi. Do you think he's going to release a large number of self-driving robo-taxis this summer, as he promised?
Well, one thing you said that was wrong, you said to me, I don't think the e-problems are his biggest headache, or whatever the terminology was. I never said it was his biggest problem. You did. I simply said to you that the EV market, and I'm heavily invested in energy, telling you that the EV market as a whole has been dying, and it's because the technology is not desirable, and the pundits in Washington ram it down your throat telling you that's what you need. So you can't blame the non-acceptance of the EV cars on Elon. The time that has not yet come, and may never. If things get turned out late in terms of product, you wouldn't know it from my neighborhood, my friend. You see hundreds and hundreds of Teslas, sometimes two in the driveway, even three. So I think not getting into his personality or his marital affairs, just look at it from a business standpoint, he's been super successful, super wealthy, and I'm not defending him. I'm not defending him. I'm simply being the voice of neutrality here as when you knock him in. No, there is a need for clarification, and that's why I joined this.
Can we move on? Can we move on?
Go right ahead.
Yeah. Like I said, it sounds like you said that the thing about EVs is his problem. You said that I said it, but I didn't remember saying it, and I'm sure if you listened to the tape, you wouldn't hear me say it. So this is going around and around and around and around. Anyway, thanks for everyone for participating tonight. I got to do my AI diatribe. I got to do my Elon Musk diatribe. So I try to minimize that. I'm sorry for the people who get annoyed when I do that. But, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Anyway, thanks for everyone. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight. Please come back next Sunday when we do this over all over again. And now it's time for full WS2N with the SpaceNet Report.
Just beforehand.
Sounds like a problem.
You need to listen to what you said. Anyway, have a good night. Take care. It's from WA2ZFM.
Let me see if I have it. AC2GS, WS2N. And, well, okay. You left me with a hot potato, you know, with the Elon stories. Wasn't going to lead with that, but, you know, I can just state the facts. Just yesterday, there was a fella from Japan, and he already paid Elon, like, X amount of money, you know, millions of dollars as a down payment. He was going to be the first passenger to go on his Starship. Starship is the one that he's building down in Boca Chica, Texas, and eventually he'll also be building them in Florida. And these are these massive rockets, bigger than the Saturn V rocket. He's got a bigger version coming up, going to be over 400 feet tall. One he has now is 397 feet tall, and he had made plans with this fellow from Japan back in 2018. He was going to be the passenger that was going to go around the moon in one of his starships, and on top of that, he was paying for extra tickets. He paid for, he wanted to have eight other people fly with him, and he paid for an extra two or four, that would be alternatives in case somebody backed out. One of the people was Tim Dodd. He's the guy that does the YouTube for the Everyday Astronaut. He was going to get a free ride as well. And they were going to take a ride around the moon, not land, but fly around the moon and then come back to Earth. And that flight was supposed to have taken off in 2023, which, of course, that time has come and gone, and it doesn't look like it's going to be anytime soon within many, many years from now. So it's all from Japan told Elon, I'm backing out, that's it. Taking my whatever money I can get back from you, and I'm going home. Didn't even tell the other people that were already well, supposedly we made plans to go, but they already chances of going anytime soon was really out. So he's trying to develop this rocket, and you know, I remember in 2018 that was a big deal on the news and everything. Oh, this guy, you know, they had pictures of him, and he's going to go and all of that. And of course, that never happened. Let me drop it. And my guess is never will happen. You know, this fellow gave up. You know, by the way, he's a billionaire from Japan. And in fact, he gave up about a year and a half ago. He made a deal with it's a company called Space Adventures. Space Adventures has been around for a while. The leader of it is this guy Peter Diamond from Queens, and they make arrangements with private people to fly to space. And they've gotten a little involved with Blue Origin, a little bit involved with helping out, you know, getting passages for Branson, for his space plane. But the one that he really deals with a lot is the Russians for the Soyuz spacecraft. He'll get a private passenger pay, think nothing of paying. Well, years ago it used to be $22 million, and that creeped up to $33, now it's up to $50, and I think they're already up to $80 million a seat. So sure enough, this fellow wanted to go to space so bad, he paid the Russians to do that, and he went up about a year and a half ago and spent a week and a half on the International Space Station. He went up with somebody else, another, let's call him tourist. So, you know, there's money made, money to be made, and lies to be told, I guess, you know, or not so much lies, but predictions that aren't coming true. You know, I don't have a problem with the predictions. He can predict that we're going to have 1 million people on Mars. I just don't want to see people ripped off for it. Any comments? WS2I.
Yeah,
WA2DFM.
This is Kilo Echo.
How much did this Japanese man pay for a ticket?
His marital issues, procreation was so unkind, and I thought it was totally inconsistent with amateur radio. You're not supposed to say things like that, according to me. I thought that was really unbelievable, and it seems that everyone is not able to forgive me, and Roy is overlooking all the accomplishments of Elon Musk. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't have rockets that I'm sending into space. This guy's a visionary. Whether he cheats people, doesn't cheat people, I don't really care. But I don't need to hear about his wives and ex-wives and his mother and father. I thought that was really disgusting.
Well, okay, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about subjects one way or another, but I take them all with a grain of salt, that's for sure. I just look at the facts, you know, and, you know, Teslas, yeah, you go to the North Shore around here, everywhere you go, somebody has a Tesla, but the future of the Tesla right now doesn't look good, according to latest news reports I've read. Not that I care. I'm always going to have a gas-operated vehicle, no matter what. No matter what, you know, if I could have a, you know, 442 or something like, you know, a Nova or a Super Sport from the 70s, you know, me a 383 engine with a Hurst shifter, and I'd be very happy. But I'm not into the electric cars. And to get the electric cars to be more popular, they're all, like you said, they're pretty much all not selling like they thought. They have no way to charge them. You know, the government wanted to get Congress to pour in a lot of money to help build 500,000 electric charging stations across the country. I don't even think that would do it, you know, 500,000. You know, what you're going to need, I did do the math on how much it takes to charge all of these cars, not only Tesla, but all of them. And whatever our electric grid handles now for all the homes, you know, with all the power plants that we have, 109 nuclear power plants and who knows how many oil plants and hydroelectric plants we have out there. Whatever we have, I just, you know,
a rough figure of how much power these things take. I'm guessing you have to double the amount of power plants we have in America. But that's it. Also, I heard Charlie in there, so I don't want to leave him out. Back to you first, and then we'll go to Charlie. This is WS2N.
WA2VSM. You know, EV cars, they tell you the range is so-and-so miles, and then when you buy the car, you find out it's half of what it is. There are variables. For example, batteries don't hold as much of a charge in the winter months, number one. You find out that even if your car is just sitting there parked in the wintertime, you're going to lose store fuels, you're going to less mileage. There's so many variables. It just encourages dump, I don't know, 20,000 or whatever number was, electric vehicles because nobody wanted them. Then in Washington, some brilliant individual raised some kind of, I don't know, tax or allotment of money. It turned out they spent $1 billion per charging station. Let's say they taxed us $100 billion. We got 100 charging stations out. Now, in addition, it isn't just the generation of the electricity, but you have to understand that the wires and the service that carries the electricity from the generating facilities to our homes, that there's only so much load that they can take. These aerial electrical wires, I think they're like 100 amps at 13,000 volts at 100 amps. But there's only so much power you can transmit over these wires. So there's a whole thing just a charade.
Oh, yeah. Martin said with the power plant, you have to double the power plants. And the infrastructure, all the wires going up and down the street. I didn't even think of that. That 13,000 volts, like you said, right? And, you know, the ones on the top before they drop down to the big transformers and drop down to the 220 that goes to the houses. So, let's double that while we're at it if we're going to have all these electric cars. But, you know, it's coming. I don't think it's... I think somewhere down the road it'll be more popular. I still don't see it ever overtaking the gas-powered machines. You know, you take fleet vehicles that are used on a regular basis. You know, all the mailmen, everybody has a truck, you know, you can make them electric. You know exactly how many miles they're going to go every day. Pull them into the shop, recharge them. You know, I can see that. All these fleet vehicles. But right now, I wouldn't want to buy one and think about driving upstate. I'd be worried about, you know, I don't care what the computer tells me. I'd be worried about, you know, am I going to find a charging place to charge this thing? Until they resolve that problem, you know. The electric cars, they'll stay local. Yeah. I think it's good for station car, you know, to bring to the Long Island Railroad back and forth every day. Can't go wrong. Anyway, Charlie, you wanted to say something. Let me go over to you, Charlie. This is WS2N.
If I insulted somebody on the radio, I want to say I am sorry. I have a habit of doing that. But personally, I don't think we need to run on electric. We can run on hydrogen. We can run on compressed air. Much other stuff.
Hit that right on the head, my friend. Absolutely. Hydrogen, the development of fuel cells. As you mentioned, hydrogen will generate electricity and water. There's no pollution. But right now, these electric vehicles, for example, a school bus for a school district costs about $100,000. And some school districts want all electric. So the price of the bus went up from $100,000 to $400,000. And how about this? How about you're running low, you need to charge your car, you drive 20 miles or 10 miles, whatever it might be, to go to a charging station, find 20 cars ahead of you. And each one takes 20 minutes or a half hour or whatever. You want to sit online? I've seen these lines. It's scary. Nobody waits at the end.
Yeah, I can try. I wouldn't want to do that either. And that's why a lot of people are charging these things in a house, but they're not getting the power out of it that you can get from a charging station. I think they're putting 420 bolts into these charging stations. I see them near the Smith Haven Mall by me. And there's always cars lined up doing that. And yes, most of them are Tesla cars. But I think it's bad. I think you're not going to see them in the future. And the Cybertruck, I've seen that. I don't like that. It looks like, I always get around and say it looks like the DeLorean, if you're old enough. You remember the DeLorean on steroids, you know, stainless steel car. But it just doesn't look, you know, as a fun thing to drive around in, yeah, but not as a truck, you know. I mean, the thing definitely does not look like a pickup truck. So, you know, give me a Ford, you know, a Ford 150, I'll be happy with it. And I guarantee I'm going to pay a lot less money than one of Elon's trucks. Now, talking about Elon, he does have a launch coming up this week. Not only this week, it's planned for the 6th. Of this month. What is that, Wednesday? He's got launches every other day, you know, with the Falcon 9, of course. But I'm talking about the new Starship that he has tested 3 times so far from Boca Chica, Texas. And everyone has, I shouldn't say failed, but he launches them and he learns from whatever goes wrong, which I'm not a big fan of. You know, I like the way NASA has done things over the years. They really test like crazy every little component, put it all together, and hope for the best. Do they blow up once in a while? But this guy, he's got, you know, I don't know how many he's launched. He launched like 5 or 6 starships by themselves. They all blew up except for one. Yeah, when he landed, I think they call that number 15. That's the other thing. These numbers keep going up. He's not launching 15 of them. You know, if he builds one and then decides to make some changes, you know, all right, that's number 16, you know. Anyway, they're up to number 30. I think they call ship number 30. And that one's going to be launched on the 6th. And it's going to duplicate the last flight that they did, the last test flight, which was about a few months ago. I think that was in April. And that's one with 33 Raptor engines. And it was, you know, pretty successful. It got off the ground. All the engines lit off. Didn't do that much damage to the launch pad like the very first launch. Again, he learned from his mistakes. I shouldn't say he. The company learned from the mistakes. That's, you know, they've got, 12,000 people working for them. And SpaceX. Let me drop. Anyway, the final success, you know, the goal right now is to launch this thing and successfully simulate the booster coming back, intact. He wants it to come down vertically in the Gulf of Mexico, and Starship itself, that's the upper part of this thing. That's got a bunch of heating coils on it. He's going to try to get it up close to 17,000 miles an hour. You know, a little bit less. He doesn't want to go into orbit. He wants to deorbit over the Indian Ocean and see if that thing could glide down to the water and see if you can flip that vertically and duplicate it as we are launching on land. So hopefully this one works. The last one did not work, but yeah, at least he got it further than number 1 and number 2. The number 4 will be, hopefully will work out a little bit better. If successful, his plans are, and I, you know, again, this is Elon speak, he says, I'm going to land the next one, number 5, back at where it took off from. I'm going to land it right back. You know, we have these big arms sticking out of the launch complex. We're going to come down vertically. The arms are going to grab this thing as it comes down and land. Ultimate goal to do this on a regular basis.
But again, the psychology of doing this, I guess it's less expensive. Watch one right after the other, learn from your mistakes, and keep going that way. Government can't do that. NASA cannot do that. If the general public was paying for the taxes, see, that's the other thing. Elon's, that's all private money for these rocket ships, for the new ones that are under development. The Boeing and Lockheed, for instance, they launched an Atlas V rocket. Atlas V has been launched since the 1990s now. Late 1990s, and they're up to the next launch is going to be number 100. 100% success. That means they went up, they did whatever they were supposed to do, and, you know, the reason for that is they test everything before they go. Do they have a lot of scrubs? Yeah, they do. 3, 2, 1, and the whole thing shuts down. Next month we'll launch, which is what's happening with the Boeing Starliner that was supposed to go up a couple of days ago. On board that you have two astronauts, Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore. Getting later, be getting their names. Anyway, they're going to be launching on the Starliner. Hopefully, on the 6th, a couple of days ago, they got down to 3 minutes and 40 seconds. Roughly 4 minutes before launch. And the ground launch sequencer, computer that handles everything. Pre-launch, right up to launch, and right after the launch. It's a ground-based computer, and there's backups. There's three of them. Backup to a backup to a backup, you know. And anyway, the one failed. And right away, it automatically called a halt, you know, and then you heard the control that's in charge of the ground launch sequencer say, halt, 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 and that was it. Those two astronauts eventually had to get it back out, and they're going to try again this Wednesday. Hopefully, they will make it successfully to the International Space Station. It'll take roughly a day to get there after launch, so what, Thursday or Friday. They'll go on board the International Space Station for about a week or two, and they want to check everything out with this vehicle, even, you know, all the way up, uphill, until they dock, and then eventually undock. The Starliner will undock in about a week and a half, maybe no more than 2 weeks, and separate from the International Space Station and return through the atmosphere. It has a heat shield. The parachutes will open up. They upgraded the parachutes, by the way. The links on the parachutes, they wanted to improve them. They did that about a year or so ago. They did not feel they were strong enough on the test, so they'll have them a little stronger. The idea was if one parachute failed, two parachutes can land this thing perfectly safe. But the links were not as strong as they wanted, so they upgraded that. They upgraded the reaction control jets made sure everything's fine on this whole vehicle, on the service module as well as the vehicle itself. Between the two of them, they have almost 70 rocket jets to maneuver in space, and it should be a fine vehicle. Hopefully, it goes well. They'll land in White Sand. Oh, so if John is out there, not too far from him. If you could, like, let's say if you were in Denver and you went on to what Interstate 25 and just kept going all the way south, you know, you'd eventually get, you know, I guess southern New Mexico. Get to White Sands, New Mexico. Well, that's where they're going to land. They're not going to land in the ocean, or like most of these capsule-like vehicles. They're going to land on land. As they come down through the atmosphere, the heat shield blows them down most of the way from 17,500 miles an hour down to around 400-500 miles an hour. Parachutes come out, and that slows them down even further. And then the when you get nearer the ground, I think it's about a mile off the ground, the heat shield separates from the Starliner. And then right before they land, they have these six big airbags that open up. And that will, you know, soften the landing. And this all works out. The scientists will love it because you can bring back science experiments on the space station that you know, you would normally want to get back in a hurry. Some of these things are time sensitive. They put them in freezers and refrigerators and stuff on board. And that'll be a big help for them. So that would mean this thing would be certified. In the future, they'll be able to launch four at a time. This is a test flight. That's why they only have two. And actually, it's five seats. So I guess somewhere down the road, they could actually launch five or maybe bring back five. They'll have that capability. On this flight, too, they're bringing up a 150-pound urine gadget thing that separates urine and creates water out of that. One of the ones on the International Space Station is on the blink. So what they're doing is they're saving all the urine in these plastic bags, and you know, for, I don't know how long it's been broken, but they're saving them. Once this gadget that they're bringing up, this is an afterthought, by the way. They didn't plan on bringing it up. They didn't know they were going to bring it up beginning in May when they first had a scrub. But now they're going to bring it up. They're putting that on board. Once that's attached to the space station, they could put that into operation and create water. They have the capability of recycling 97% of the water on the International Space Station. I just heard that the other day. About a year or two ago, I thought I heard 90%, but they're up to 97%, which is really fantastic. There's some kind of bizarre number that they use. It costs you $5,000 for every liter of water that you bring up to the space station. So I guess that number comes from weight, you know. So, you know, in case of water, theoretically, would cost you more fortune. Anyways, any comments or questions for the space that report? WS2S.
I just have one more comment, but it may not be directly on base, if you will, about the space.
Yeah, sure, go ahead. Very good. And I always say that this is the technical. If somebody has a technical question, they can always ask that as well. Not to me, but thank God we have Roy on board and others. Sure, go ahead.
Okay, it's Stuart, WATVSM. You know, I was just listening to the mail here for some time, and I was under the impression that any derogatory remarks are prohibited. So I listened and listened about Elon Musk. Now, I have no reason to defend him. I don't know him personally. I think he is a visionary because, number one, look what he's accomplished. Look what he's accomplished. And most importantly, you pointed out something incredibly important. He's employing 12,000 Americans. If I was wearing a hat, I would take my hat off to him just for that alone. And you know, I could care less about marital issues, family issues. They don't belong on this computer at all. But with regard to the accomplishments, I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't send up any space rockets from my home. And the fact that the only other entity that does that is NASA. I think that's quite a laudable type of compliment, that he's capable of doing SpaceX, he's capable of making these electric vehicles, this, that, and the other. That's a hell of a lot of accomplishments. So I just thought it was extremely rude to knock someone based upon marital history. Elon is used to be the wealthiest man in the world. It should happen to all of us. But again, you know, this whole electric vehicle thing, as pointed out by Charlie, right now they have hydrogen-based fuel cells, and I invest in all types of energy, very heavily invested in energy, fossil fuel and alternative fuels. And there's a lot of promise to that. I think they have buses right now that have their hydrogen powered. So, I, you know, hey, listen, as far as I'm concerned, these electric vehicles are nothing but glorified golf coins. That's how I look at it. Charlie, do you have any remarks?
Now, let me see if I have it.
Yes, these electric buses are, you know, you can't put out an electric, when these electric cars get on fire, you can't put them out. If you put them on a bus full of children, how do you get these kids out?
And how about the notion that initially it cost $10,000 to replace your battery that crapped out? That was the going rate, I believe, initially with the Musk vehicle, $10,000. Let me let it drop a sec. There was a guy in Sweden who bought one of the first Tesla cars, and he drove it quite often, and he needed a new battery, and the cost of the battery exceeded the value of his used Tesla. So he has been said to have blown up the car with dynamite to get rid of it because he was so PO'd. People don't talk about all the downsides. You want to pay $5,000, $2,000, $10,000, whatever it is to replace these batteries. No one says anything at all about that, Charlie.
Okay, let me see if I have it.
I don't know what to tell you about it, but they're not talking about it, but they should.
Okay. WS2N for the space.
Everybody thinks they're going to buy a car. They're going to save money.
I
do a lot of research.
It had to be 30 years ago in 60 minutes. Showed all these buses riding around with hydrogen fuel.
I can tell you that there are studies that have found that the
buses
to drive 100 miles or whatever the mileage was.
Back then I thought, well, maybe it'll take off, but you need the infrastructure.
Than the regular conventional,
and I think you have the same problem there, Stu. You don't have the infrastructure set up for the hydrogen.
Anyone who wants to buy an electric vehicle, God bless you. But
do that.
It isn't for me.
I think it would be even more impossible to do that than have charging our facilities in every gas station.
What about the situation where someone lives in an apartment house? I've heard stories where people have to go drive 20 minutes or 30 minutes to charge their car, 20 to 30 minutes to come back to their apartment, and they've used up half their range. Does it figure?
Yeah, I concur. Not only that, the time to do it, you know. You're on a trip, you're going to stand there for a half hour, an hour, charging to go another couple hundred miles. You know, if I pull into a gas station and I put a $20 bill in, I'm gone inside of 2.5 minutes. I pretty much don't have to worry. I could probably go almost anywhere in this country. If I know there's a town coming up nearby somewhere, I know I'm going to get to a gas station. You know, unless we're in, we have another COVID attack and everything's closed.
About this, what about you go to the airport? It's winter time. You park your car at the airport. You come back a week later. Your EV battery is down to zero. You don't have to worry with a gasoline-powered car about that.
Yeah, I know you're 100% right. And the electric cars up north, when it gets cold up here, you need heat. I get into a traffic jam on the LIE, I'm trying to get through the Midtown Tunnel, and I'm sitting there, getting a little nippy. I think I better put the heat on. They say, I better not put the heat on. I might run out of power. I don't want to get stuck in the tunnel. Really wind up with a weird situation.
Just remember this. When you wrap gasoline in a tow truck, it can bring you a couple gallons of gasoline. What happens if you run out of juice? Tow trucks have to tow you. I mean, it's absurd. And furthermore, I understand that these lithium batteries have to be kept warm automatically with a thermostat. You're constantly using the battery to heat the battery in the wintertime. And I may have heard something about cooling it in the summer, but you have to be ever so careful with lithium. And these things do blow up and go on fire. And the fact that you want heat, you want air conditioning, you're bumper-to-bumper traffic. Look at these cars that got stuck in blizzards where they didn't move for an hour on some highway. And all these electric cars just ran out of juice. It's insane.
I agree. Give me a gas-powered car, I'm very happy. You know, if I'm going somewhere, I'm going to worry I might break down. But, you know, something might go wrong with it. And chances are another station, there might be a station nearby in the next town where somebody could, you know, fix the alternator or fix the, you know, fix whatever, you know, the gas pump that just quit. Or maybe my car won't restart, you know, and you know, might be a battery problem. You know, just put a new battery in. An electric car, what you know, would you say, $5,000, $10,000 batteries? I don't think so. You know, you take a cab to the airport, after that, leave the car there, and go and fly home. You know, well, I just wanted to mention one other thing before it gets any later. I got 5 minutes left anyway. I'm always pushing for the space program, of course, because I always see China or somebody coming up behind us. Even India. India is planning a launch within about a year and a half of a crew, people on board. So there's always that. You know, I mean, they're way behind us, but, you know, if we back off in this country, you know, it's possible that somebody could catch up. China, just yesterday, did another lander on the moon, and this time again on the dark side of the moon. Or the far side of the moon, let me put it that way. The far side of the moon. In Apollo Crater, they call it. And they have a satellite, you know, that's in orbit around the moon, a very high altitude. So they're using that as a repeater for the center. Within 2 weeks time frame, they're going to drill or scoop up dirt from this crater. And then they have an ascent module. The ascent module is going to take off. It's going to dock with a mothership that's in orbit around the moon. And that in turn will pass the material from the ascent module into the mothership. The mothership will head back to Earth, separate, and it has a descent module. You know, again, with a heat shield and all. And they plan on landing in Inner Mongolia. On the grasslands of Mongolia. So that's not good for us. I mean, you know, we've landed half a dozen people, half a dozen spacecraft on the moon with a total of 12 people over 50 years ago. But, you know, we're still trying to do that. NASA's still at it. We have the Space Launch System with Orion. You know, but there's delays, and, you know, before you know it, you know, we're going to have, you know, another space race of sort between us and China. We're going to land on the south pole of the moon, you know, start a base there. You know, is it economically worth it? That could be fought over. Is it politically worth it? I'd say most definitely. Anyway, I'm going to close out. We'll get around to another minute, but if anybody has any last comments, I'll pass it over to you. This is WS2M for the
next
space
time. Complete.
WH2SM. Just one quickie and then I'm gone. We also didn't address the issue of the fact that these batteries, these EV cars, use rare earth minerals. And where do you think we get them from? The majority from China. And then you have the issue of what do you do to dispose of them? I mean, there are so many technical issues that were not brought up by this net. And I have a very good working knowledge of all the, you know, the liabilities and what have you. But to just think about it, those batteries are made with rare earth minerals, mostly from China. Have a wonderful evening. I hope I didn't digress too very much, Charlie, and you as well. You take care. It's a pleasure speaking to all of you. I'll just be listening to WA2VFM.
Very good. Thanks for participating, Stu and Charlie. Anybody else that was listening to us, we'll
we'll be back next week. And I'm just hoping to Starliner successfully gets to the space station. The one woman, Sony Williams, is a ham radio operator. I don't know if she's going to make any contact while she's up there. Some of them do, that are on a six-month stay. They will be there for about a week and a half. But still, I want these two people to get up there, get back safe, and get the Starliner into operation. This way you have competition between SpaceX and Boeing. And Boeing and slash Lockheed. Lockheed is involved with Boeing as well for the rocket, for the Atlas V rocket. And eventually the Vulcan rocket, which will be replacing it within a year or so, has already successfully launched. And lots to talk about in the future. 73, guys. I'm going to pass over to Roy, AC2GS, WS2N, for the Space Net Report. Back to you, Roy.
Yes, is AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do on the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. I especially appreciate it.
This is KE2HAU saying thank you, Paul, and I'll speak to you next week.
Great, Charlie. Have a good one. We'll be here, hopefully. And, Roy, we only got about 20 seconds out of that transmission.
Hey, Paul, if you're into sports cars, you missed a good car show in Wisconsin today.
Really? Why, they have the old cars, an old car show?
Yes. By 10 o'clock in the morning, the parking lot was full.
Yeah, I used to like going to those. Very good, you know. And have you lived on the island pretty much your whole life, Charlie?
About half my life in Queens and half my life in Suffolk.
Yeah, remember National Speedway? I thought that was great. You know, I grew up in Queens. And we used to fix cars up, and they let anybody race out there. It was great. Of course, that's all gone now.
Where in Queens did you live?
On a borderline, not too far from where Stu was talking about. He said Lake Success. I was just south of that, New Hyde Park, right on the border of Nassau County. Not too far from Lakeville Road. Do you know where that is, Charlie?
I live two blocks off of Lakeville Road, just south of Union Turnpike.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just north. You know, if I wanted to, I could have walked to LIJ and give you an idea.
Same here. I could have walked there. Yeah. But that car show was good. I took mine out, too.
Oh, you have one. What do you have, Charlie?
I have a 1942 World War Jeep.
That's terrific. Wow. That's great. You know? 1942. Yeah, it comes right out of the air. You know, right out of the wartime. That's terrific. That's good to hear. What size engine was in that thing?
It was a flathead 4, about 80 horsepower.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, the same ones you used to see riding, you know, they used to ride the generals around and all that. Yeah, jump in, let's go, you know, in all the war movies.
I turned down the Band of Brothers.
Wow, okay. That's good. Yeah, I liked all the Mopars and, you know, those kind of cars. You know, didn't have enough money to really go all out, but, you know, we gave it a shot, you know. Took a Chevy, took the old headers off, put aluminum headers on there, you know. The Edelbrock manifold, four-barrel operators. That's about all I could afford, you know. I wanted to put a blower on there, but I, you know, didn't have enough money for it. All of that stuff years ago. You know, and the group of people we had did the same thing. They'd all be, you know, buying these kind of cars. A lot of fun.
Yeah, but where I stopped is because I was getting tickets up the yin-yang. I had the Firebird with the big V8. That car was not controllable.
I get that right. Yeah, off the, what were they, the Hustler headers? It was a three-bolt flange. You know, so I created dual exhaust out of this 327 engine. And, I had these mufflers, what were they called, thrush mufflers. So, they'd be hooked up like that, but then you get out to the track, and you would take the two bolts out on each one and swing it down. So only the one bolt was holding everything in. You would do that to both of them, and then you ride out on the track like that. So, for us, it was your own car. It was a street car, but, you know, get to race it, Not like the pro stockers, they would tow the car out, of course, It wouldn't be a street car. But, yeah, a lot of fun. National Speedway. All gone. I think that condominium is down. Or, their apartment buildings. Anyway, back to you, Charlie. Then I'm going to sign back to you.
I had a 67 Firebird. Okay. Gorgeous green. Two-door convertible, white leather interior. I made the left off of Lakeville Road on the service road north, and somebody came out of a side road, okay, out of Lake Success in a brand new Lincoln and jumped in front of me, and I wrecked the car really bad.
Yeah, I know. That's tough. You know, very, very busy area. Well, now it's really busy, but, even back then, you had to be careful. Parking, you don't want to have anything, for us anyway, you don't want to have anything too valuable. We're all parked on the street, and not too far from the hospital, as you know. You'd have cars parked all over. You were lucky to get a parking spot, within a house or two of your own house. So, what are you going to do? Okay, I'm going to sign Charlie. Nice talking to you. We'll catch you next week. And, of course, then, nowadays I don't have those cars. just a regular Honda is fine with me. CRV. Back to you, 73. Have a good night. WS2.
AE2AJU 73, and I'll speak to you next week.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. That's tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2V.